This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government. Weapons of class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge. All other weapons are restricted. Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge and shall not be harmed. Commencing at the siren, any and all crime, including murder, will be legal for 12 continuous hours. Police, fire, and emergency medical services will be unavailable until tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. when the purge concludes. Blessed be our new founding fathers and America, a nation reborn. May God be with you all.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
I'm Nevermore, and I'm not normally this pleasant sounding.
I'm Frosty, and I'm just a frozen asshole.
And that's right, you got DV Oink, who loves to play and shit. I mean, no, wait a minute, hold on.
And they really didn't name y'all Asshole 1 and 2?
That's what the boss calls it. It's...
Two people remember me, and one's folks, Mom.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
We were a little bit soggy.
Boiled bacon.
That's right.
And I'd like to introduce DV Midnight Backdoor for all your backdoor needs.
You know what that means.
We will talk really slow for you.
Oh, no, some of those nights at work.
I'd say that's a different little bird.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out. And welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out. Yours truly, Nevermore here. You're on DV Radio, WDVR. And with me tonight, we have Oink, we have Frosty, and we have Uncle Fester. But we also have a very, very, very extra special guest and an extra special show, because there are only two topics in the world right now, and we don't want to talk about either one of them. We're avoiding them. There's no My Sharona, and there's none of the other stuff that I'm not even going to get into. So with us tonight, we have Devil Dog. Devil Dog, tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, he's a Marine, or he wouldn't be called Devil Dog, but moving on.
That's right. I appreciate you guys having me on. I am the Devil Dog. I'm from the South Bronx, New York. New York City detective. I've been here for almost 20 years as a detective. Did my time in the Persian Gulf. And now I'm just trying to do the right thing and set an example for all law enforcement out there in the police department community. Not all of us are bad. Just those few bad apples gave us a bad name. But I can tell you that the majority of the police in my department and throughout the country, they do the right thing.
Exactly. So tonight I want to make this show, and I'll even call it, even though I stole this name from a police department that's doing it, I don't know where, I can't remember, I see too much on Facebook to remember, I'm calling it Humanizing the Shield, which means for all the bad stuff that everybody gets, you know, social media to death with, they rarely ever have a camera going when there's good stuff. I'll give an example. Every single winter, 95% of my police officers bring people in off the streets and buy them coats so they don't freeze. That's one of the good things you don't hear about. But since we have a detective who has probably seen everything being in the Bronx, New York City, we want to hear some feel-good stories that you have witnessed or that you know about, or you want to give props out to officers that you know.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I hold dear in my heart is what the police department here and the officers here do for our veteran community. As far as, let's, for example, for Christmas, we basically host a dinner for our veterans. We pick them up at the VA hospital. We bring them down. We serve them the Christmas dinner. We give them presents, clothing. And those are the one many things we don't advertise. We don't have the news media here because it's not all about the media. It's just us giving back to our veterans. We do a toy drive for our kids, again. We don't publicize it. It's nothing that we want any type of newsworthy or to be patted on the back. It's just something that the cops here do, just the little things those cops do to show the community that we're here for them. We do countless things. I mean, you name it. I do so many things on my own time where I visited the local shelters, checking up on the residents there and bring them clothing, whatever they need, services, These are things that I do in my personal time that I don't advertise. I don't need to be, I don't need awards for it. I don't need recognition for it. It's just something that I do not only as a cop, but a decent human being.
And that's awesome. Now, I have seen some police officers, because of what they do, they are on social media, like the police officer that spends all of his time driving across country in a custom Batmobile with lifelike costumes, and he visits sick kids. So if the kid's wish is to meet Superman, he funds it out of his pocket, and he drives up to, say, New York City, because I think he's in Texas, and he visits the child as Superman, Spider-Man, whatever they request. I think his most expensive costume to date was almost like $5,000 out of his pocket. And I kind of know what police officers make, and I'm going to tell you right now, that probably took his life savings.
Fantastic story.
But there's a million stories like that that go around that people don't see. So I'm trying to not go on the times, but on the times, what is your police department doing right now that you always do that's not for the media show to help build or bridge that gap between what they consider minorities and the police department?
And that's exactly what it is. It's bridging the gap between us, the police, and the community. We do so many things. We hold monthly community council meetings where we invite the community into an open forum. We usually pick like a nursing home or maybe a gymnasium, and we talk with the community. What are your concerns? We introduce our officers, especially our beat officers. We tell them, what problems are you having? How can we resolve these issues? How can we resolve these tensions that are being built between us and the community? We also reach out to the youth. I have a program that I call Bigs in Blue, where I go out to the schools that have a high poverty rate, and I engage as a mentor to these students. I bring along two or three officers. It calls Bigs in Blue, and we basically mentor these kids. A lot of these kids don't like the police, and a lot of them get it from the street. A lot of them get it from their parents. But by them seeing us in a different light, just as regular people, just like, you know, they are, it sets a big impact on them. And, we want them to succeed. We want them to feel that it's okay to talk to us. We're their friends. We don't want them to fear us. And that's the stigma we got to get away from these young generation, is having these older people tell them that the cops are bad, don't trust the police. So community council meetings is one of the first things we do. Youth coordination is another thing we do. We do things with our seniors, crime prevention. Those are just some of the many things we do to bridge that gap.
And you're absolutely right, because I hear parents say it, because I work closely with the police department, but I hear a lot of parents, when me and the officers are walking by, I'll hear them, I told you, if you don't stop misbehaving, they'll take you to jail. And that irks me so bad. I hate that, because number one, my son grew up in Greensboro. And I taught him, especially if we were at fairs or something, the first thing he was to do if he was to lose mommy or daddy was to go find the nearest police officer and cling to them until we're found. And when I hear the kids go by and they're being told, if you're bad, you go to jail. A 5-year-old does not deserve to go to jail.
No, and that's the fear that they have in these little kids. When they look at us, oh, my God. I remember mommy said, if I don't behave, I'm going to get locked up. And the minute I hear that, I put a stop to it right away. I tell them, listen, don't say that to your child. We're not the bad people. And then I tell you, your mommy, your daddy's a little bit confused. We don't do that. We only do that to the bad people. And I encourage these kids to, if you need anything, if you're scared, come up to us. You can trust us. It just irks me when a parent does that in front of me, and I put a stop to it right away.
And I think a lot of it's not to be malice, that they're just trying to get their kids to behave, but bad behavior and breaking laws are two entirely different things. A kid could draw on a wall, but you can't get arrested for that. You know what I'm saying? Now at 18, if you're graffitiing, but when most of these people, their children are toddlers, if I'm lucky, they're school age. And our officers, because of their departmental policies, can't really say too much. But I turn around and I say, ma'am, what are you going to do if somebody goes to kidnap that child and the officer you just told them to fear is the only person standing there and you just taught that child to run from him? I don't quite understand the meaning behind it. And I get lashbacks and I get complaints, but I mean, I'm really big about trying to mesh the community with the police officers. They came to us not long ago and said that the food bank was empty for all the homeless people and that they weren't able to do hot meals and that one team was chipping in their money. So I went straight to my store manager and I said, they're asking, can we, because we can't donate food because of the virus and things like that. You can't hand out food. Right. I was like, what can we do? And she's like, have them come up here. And she come up there and she outdid them. Actually, she was going to match them. And then on her way out the door, she's like, oh, by the way, I threw an extra $50 on that card. So they filled back up the food bank and we didn't have to. And, you know, I know people hate corporations, but we do everything we can to try to keep that bond. Yeah, we gotta drag out some bad guys. Don't get me wrong. We've got to go after some younger ones. It happens. But at the end of the day, they're not bad people. Not all of them.
Exactly right. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's exactly right.
I mean, it kind of breaks my heart because the last time this kind of thing went around, assassinating police officers was a big thing. I know some of it had happened in New York City, so I know that hits close to home. But that's all that this kind of rhetoric does is, you know, that could be an innocent, good, long-time officer that's never had a complaint in their life other than, you know, when somebody was breaking the law and they didn't like getting caught. Get shot right in the back of the head on their lunch break, you know,
exactly.
And I mean, ain't trying to go there, but that's the fear that y'all have to live with.
No, that's true. I mean, we lost a wonderful dear friend of mine, Mita Soltis Familia, detective. She was just sitting on her lunch break in a police van and she got assassinated just for wearing the uniform. She was a sweetheart of a police officer, loved the community. She loved her family, loved the job. And because she was wearing the blue uniform, she was assassinated. And I told some of my friends, did you see the police riot? Did you see the police destroy property? Of course not. We're better than that. We just come together as one and just do our best to show the community that we're not the bad people. We're here to help. And it's unfortunate because I lost a lot of friends because of what's going on. But that's okay. Now you know who your true friends are. But I just want everyone to understand there's a few bad apples in every bunch. Yes, there are bad cops out there, but the majority of the cops are great cops. They do it because it's a passion. They do it because they want to do it. And please don't portray us as bad because of that one incident that happened in Minneapolis, because that was horrendous. I condone it, as all other good cops do. We're trying to make a difference, and we just act for peace. We act for calm. That's all we want.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the misconception is that police officers get into the line of work because it's good money. And I hate to be the bearer of anybody that's in rookie school right now, but that is not the case. I actually make more than most rookies do, and I work at a retail store doing loss prevention. Now, yeah, I always say, and you can add to it because I'm not a police officer. I was in the military, but I'm not now. I say they do it for one of two reasons. One, they really want to make a change, or two, they thought that they were going to get out there and own the streets, and they don't last very long. I watch rookies come and go that head's not good on their shoulders. You don't really sign up to be a police officer for money. And if you do, you're kind of, I hope you work for a really good agency because you're not making more than, I'll say it, around here they make about $35,000 a year. That's not nothing. You can make that in retail.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I mean, being a police officer is a calling. It's something you have to have a passion for doing, just like when I was a Marine. It's a calling. It's something that you have to have your heart set on doing and serving in public service, putting other people's life before yours, serving and protecting, keeping the peace, knowing that you're going to be in harm's way when you put on that uniform and go out in the street, and you might not be able to see your family at the end of the day. Some of these young cops are, you know, they're naive. They go out there, they don't want to conquer the world. And some of them, unfortunately, have a chip on their shoulders and do things that are not proper. And those are the young guys that need to be checked. When I was a field training officer, I taught all my young officers, respect all people, regardless of what their ethnic background, their religion. Doesn't matter if they live in the ghetto. I mean, I'm a product of the ghetto, born and raised in the projects. Born and raised by a single mother, six kids, on welfare, picked on when I was school for being poor. And I told myself, if I ever become a cop, I'm going to do everything I can to help people, to show an example to the younger generation. And I hope I'm doing a great job, because over 20 years, I got no complaints. I teach my girls well. My daughters are adults, and they know the difference between, you know, the good and the bad.
In chat, he's pointing out, I know you didn't mean you condone police brutality. You just said condone. You just forgot out the word don't. So I'm going to let you rephrase what you said before about police. What happened?
We do not condone that.
Okay.
Those actions were horrific. And I'm sorry if I misspoke, but no, I do not condone that. Those actions. Horrible, horrible.
Well, no, I just didn't want to get you hate mail, because, I mean, Frag Out Drag Out's kind of all about seeing if we can get hate mail, but this show's a little bit different. I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to dwell on just hammering in there's good, there's bad, because, I mean, I work loss prevention. There's bad loss prevention. I've caught my own. I mean, there's bad in every walk of life, every type. And I feel like that the police departments now are so shorthanded.
Yeah.
That if they get through rookie school, they're going to get hired. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're the right fit for the job. You don't know if they're the right fit until they're on the job.
Correct. Absolutely right.
And people are saying it should be harder to get in. I don't know what the police process is 20 years ago or what it is now, but they go through background checks, psychological evals. Some of them are even required to do lie detector tests. So it's not like that they let a psychopath join the police force.
Right. That's absolutely
not
right.
Not intentionally.
Yeah. The vetting process still needs to be, it needs to be improvised. I mean, yeah, we do the psychological, we do written, and we do a one-on-one psychological. We do medical background, we do a criminal background, but every now and then, you got these characters that slip through the cracks, and they're racist, and they're horrible. But when it comes time to being vetted, they slip by the cracks, and it's not until they get into the field when you can see their true personality, how they feel about other individuals. Not everybody out there in the projects are criminals, and I can't stand it when I see these young cops out there and talking bad about these people because they live in the hood. There's hardworking people in the hood. There's hardworking people in the projects. And they need to be, we just think we need to do a better job in vetting when we hire new police officers. That's my opinion.
Well, I think a lot, like true narcissists and stuff. I mean, I'm not trying to go into psychological, but I am going to go into psychological. They can hide and adapt to be whoever you need them to be to get to where they want to be. And a lot of people that have ill will come into it thinking, well, I'm going to get through. I'm going to be the good little rookie I'm supposed to be. And when nobody's looking, then I can be the monster that I want to be.
It's so sad, but yes, unfortunately, yeah.
Now, see, I love the world of body cams. Now, I've heard people go, they need body cams. Then once they got it and people started lying and getting caught going, okay, we don't want them to have body cams. Now I will say those head cams freak me out a little bit. One of our police departments have those. And the first time they were talking to me, they like put their head down when they got their new camera and like aim it up your nose. And I'm like, you can stand back there and talk to me, bro. But I think they're great because they tell both sides of the story. And if the department's set up right, they can't get to it to edit it. I don't know how it goes everywhere else, but here it goes straight back to the mainframe. And the minute they put it on the dock, it's downloaded. They can't do nothing. They can't take it back. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Well, exactly.
I know that a lot of agencies probably aren't connected like this, especially the smaller ones, because it's expensive. But, you know, they say, well, what if they forget to turn on a cam? Ours works if your woo-woos and your blue lights are on, that automatically comes on. You also have the option of, if you're far away from your car, turning it on as well. But I know that 95% of the time that sucker's running, and I've said it's a good thing I ain't got an answer to their internal affairs. That's all I got to say.
I tell you, I support body cam because it does two things. It protects not only the community, but it protects the officer from any false allegations. And since we enacted the view of body cams, the civilian complaints have gone down drastically. And if there's misconduct, yeah, you can actually prove it. of a cop's misconduct. So body cams are a great tool. I'm glad we got them. We're taught to engage it whenever before we're about to engage in some type of police action, whether it's writing a summons or doing a car stop. We have to turn on and engage it. So the whole thing could be put on camera. And you're right, at the end of the shift, we dock it, everything gets downloaded and up in the database.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's repercussions if you're one of those people who's mysteriously never got a charge or it never engages or it's never turned on for anything.
Absolutely, yep, absolutely.
And see, that's,
if you got nothing to hide, just put it on, unless you're planning on doing something that's not proper. That's all I can think of. Put the body camera on. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect them. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, I know that things slip out. You know, I myself may or may not have said once or twice to criminals to shut the fuck up and sit the fuck down. But I'd rather I would rather take that memo than say, like, a female that's been arrested, say that somebody did something sexually to her and ruined their career and they never laid a finger on her. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So I'd rather take the chewing and – trust me, I still get them. I don't work for the PD, and I still get them from some of the sergeants. But it to me, the world we live in, old school policing is a thing of the past. There's a lot more modern stuff, and I know you're in the city of cameras. I mean, I can't imagine that there aren't street cameras just damn near everywhere now.
Oh, yeah. You can't even throw a piece of paper on the floor without getting caught.
Exactly. See, I'm from a small city town, so there's no cameras. If there's not a camera on the outside of a building from a business, there's not going to be cameras. So without that body camera, you got nothing.
Yep. Cameras, like I said, cameras are a good thing. And I'm glad that, you know, we have that within the power of the police department, because it helps solve crimes. It helps protect, like I said, it helps protect both us and the community. It's a great tool to have.
Well, I guess I should let some of the other ones talk now.
Yeah, please. If they have any questions, they can bring it on. I mean,
Fester is he's not a firefighter anymore, but we still call him a firefighter because now he's the one-legged firefighter. I guess he could dance in a circle on one foot while putting out a fire. But Frosty is our brother from another mother Marine, and Oink is from the Air Force, who apparently they let work near planes for a living at some point. I don't know what the hell they were thinking with that one.
I was going to say, they let us both near planes. What the heck?
All right.
I mean, they let me near planes, but I had an M60 machine gun. I wasn't working on them. Just saying. And Oink.
Oh, I do have a question for you, Devil Dog.
Yeah, please.
Do they still have the Youth Explorer program?
Exactly. Yes, we do. It's one of our great programs. We got a great detective that's in charge of that program. Yes, we do have the Youth Explorer program. It's one of the fantastic programs that we can do to teach the youth to stay out of trouble, encourage them, mentor them all the way through. They go to college, they can join the cadet program, and after the cadet program, they can become cops.
So most people, because we have first responders or somebody who works with police, explain to them what the Youth Explorer program is.
It's exactly what we call it. The NYPD is called the Explorer Program. It's a program where we take, you know, the youth ranging from ages like 10 to 21. And it's a free program. They come meet here at the precinct after school. And not only we help them with their homework, with their studies, but we take them on trips to different places. Like we take them to, let's say we take them to our SWAT team and let them see how the SWAT team is run. The canine team, the horses. We take them to other companies to see how the companies are being run. We practice drills with them. They do competitions. They go on field trips. They travel all over the world to compete against other law enforcement explorers. It's a great program, giving them, you know, motivation, mentoring. It keeps them out of trouble. We provide the uniforms for them. Everything is paid for by the city. So it's a great program. And we have one of the best ones. I mean, I'm proud to say in my precinct, we have one of the best Explorer programs there is in the city.
Now, I forget New York City just in itself, probably. I can't even begin to guess how many different precincts. You know, I'm from towns where there's only one police department. And then there's usually the sheriff's department's at the courthouse. So, you know, that's all you got. You got the courthouse, sheriff's department, you got the PD, and that's about it. So the smaller communities, they, I don't know if they still do the Explorer program around here. I know they used to, but if it's city funded, probably not, because there's a lot of budget cuts going on lately.
Is that Explorer program still sponsored or kind of directed by the scouting program? Or have you guys gotten away from that?
Yeah, we've gotten away from that. That program is strictly funded through the NYPD, and we work in conjunction, with the Police Athletic League, the PAL.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's a great program. The kids love it. They love coming here to the precinct wearing their little uniforms. They practice their drills. We do scenarios with them as far as car stops. They love when we take them to the trips. So, hey, we're going to go see the canine officers interact with the dogs. And great kids. You know, a lot of them go on to become cops. Some of them go on to the military. We got a few that went to the Marines and send us pictures of them in Marine uniform. So these kids are great. And then they go and they tell their friends and then their parents. And it's a great, great overall program.
That is cool.
I'm trying to see if Oink's on a phone call, or did we lose Oink? Did Oink run away?
No, you called on Fester. I've let him go, and then
okay. I just want to make sure he was still here.
So no,
well, his turn.
We were making fun of you for being near planes, and you didn't say nothing. So I was just worried.
Well, you know, they didn't crash, so luckily it wasn't my fault anyway. no, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer of the group or anything like that, but you know that thin blue line, that thin green line, as we call it in the military. You know, they kind of go hand in hand, like you said earlier, where it takes that dedication, that spark. And, you know, but first and foremost, thank you, you know, for doing what you guys do. It's not easy, and obviously the pay can't make up for it ever, you know. But one thing I just want, you know, we talked about humanizing that shield. You know, one thing I like to keep in mind is that, you know, even an officer could have a bad day. You know, there's a human behind that, you know, that shield that, yes. You know, could have just came off a domestic where, you know, a woman got the crap knocked out of her, or a traffic accident where a two-year-old lost his life. And now he's responding to you because you were the idiot, you know, doing 95 and a 75, you know. Right. So, you know, I think people just need to take a step back. You know, these guys and women, you know, they see the worst of humanity, and could have just came off these calls to where, you know, like I said, a two-year-old, a baby or someone lost their life, and now you're the jackass because you think you know the law, and now you're quoting shit. Give the guys and women a break, you know, because the job they're doing is one that's needed, first of all, and second is – it's not all guts and glory, people. It's not, you know, it's not, you know, the greatest thing in the world, but by God, we need them. So, you know, cut these officers some slack.
I appreciate that, man. I really do appreciate that.
Well, we're getting ready to take our first break, but Oink actually hit what I wanted to talk about on the next break is the stigma of police or firemen or any emergency response and being able to discuss about all the bad stuff that they see. So we're going to take our break. You're listening to Frag Out Drag Out on DV Radio, WDVR, and we'll be right back.
DV Radio.
Nothing interesting on TV? That's why you're listening to DVRadio.net, WDVR.
This ain't reality TV!
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal!
It was at this moment that he knew he fucked up.
Oh, rude! Well, isn't that special?
Bloody, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Mama said that.
Good day, sir!
Now class is dismissed, gentlemen.
What's Stevie?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio.
DV Radio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DV Radio now. That's patreon.com/DV Radio.
Radio. Let's get it on.
We got some bread made for you.
The music.
Let's go.
You're listening to WDVR on DVRadio.net. By veterans, for veterans.
Simply made for you.
And welcome back to Frag Out Drag Out. DV Radio, WDVR. Still got Nevermore. Still have Uncle Fester. Still have Frosty. We have Oinkin here somewhere, even though I think he lost the mute button a long time ago. And our special guest, Devil Dog. Before we went to break, we were discussing the things that, you know, that the officers could be having a bad day because they just saw something horrible. And I have a feeling the stigma is just as bad in the police department as it is in the military. It's getting better in the military, but what is it like if you come off of a scene, and we're not going to go into details because I'm not trying to upset people, that haunt you and you report it the right way and the wrong way? What do you see in your line of work if you come off of something that haunts your memories?
Yeah, we get that a lot, and I've had my share, especially coming from anything regarding children and little kids. When you got to go to a scene and you see 2-year-old, you know, deceased because he drowned in a bathtub. And you expect to just, after seeing that and handling it and just going back to work like it's no big deal. If you say it doesn't affect you, you're lying. It affects you. It really does. What I'm grateful with this department, we have services there. And I really wish that most of the officers reach out to these services just to, you know, get themselves back in the game. I mean, we have services like PAPA. It's police officers providing peer assistance. We have EAU, Early Intervention Unit. We have our chaplains unit. And we have also outside resources as well to take advantage of and just get you need to talk to someone. But, and then sometimes you might see something that's, you know, just pisses you off where you go to a domestic and you see the, you know, the mom or whoever it is beat up and she's crying and you see the perpetrator there and he's cursing at you and screaming and she's in really, really bad shape. And, you know, some of these cops, they take it with them, you know, and they go out on the street with that in their mind and, you know, it affects them. So, you know, we have our resources. I'm not going to say it doesn't affect it. It does affect you. Sometimes you take it home, but you got to continue with your job, be professional and just take it day by day.
Now, see, I think a lot of departments may only have the chaplain.
Correct.
You know, I've worked with police officers for a better part of 15 years. So I've somehow became especially with the rookies, the listener that's not going to go run to their chief and say this person. Now I would, don't get me wrong. If I thought they were unfit to work, I would step in.
Correct.
But until Facebook, veterans didn't really have a place to go and do that other than a hotline. But I've noticed the more I search and the more I look, I don't really find too many first responder groups unless y'all got some kind of secret society I don't know about that step in and do suicide prevention and peer support and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, and this is by no means making any excuses for any officer who's ever went out there and killed someone intentionally. I'm talking about the ones that deal with it in their head day after day, and you see them start to go downhill. And I'm just wondering, is there stuff like that out there? I know in your city, but I mean, nationwide, do you think that if there was better peer support and counseling and the not fearing of losing their job, that there would be better police officers?
Well, that's exactly, that's my point, what you just said, that last statement, the fear of losing their job. That's where we're at least where in my department. a lot of these young officers, and all the older officers, they feel like reaching out for help is going to cause them to, you know, lose their assignments, lose their job, take their gun from them. And that's a shame because we revamped that whole reaching out for help where, you know, we encourage it. You know, you're not going to lose your job. You know, you're not going to be, you know, labeled as a weak person, because I always say reaching out for help is a sign of great strength. It's that person that reaches out for help. It's a true, true warrior, because you got to help yourself before you can help the community, before you can help your family. And that's the problem that we've been going on. I mean, we have the Veterans Crisis Hotline. Those veterans that are all police officers, I'm a part of the American Legion, but I'm proud to serve as first vice commander. And, you know, I can always count on my brother and sisters there. I can, you know, count on the people at the VA hospital, has wonderful, wonderful staff. But, you know, you don't have to use internal, you can use external play. You know, if you don't want to go within the police department, that's fine. Go private, go somewhere else. The main thing is to reach for help. And if they don't reach for that help, unfortunately, that's where we get the suicides. Last year, 10 police officers committed suicide. Horrific, horrific. It's not worth it. And I keep preaching everywhere I go when I speak with the new officers, reach out for help. Hell, call my personal number. I can't care what time it is. But reaching out for help is not a weakness. It's a sign of strength. And you, like I said, how can you expect to do your job out there if you're not helping yourself? So, yeah, there are resources. You just got to take advantage of those resources.
I mean, human, you're still human. At the end of the day, whether you're sworn to uphold the law or you're the lawbreaker, you're still, we're all human. My biggest thing, I think, would be that I've noticed is the thing about veterans is, especially when they're in that moment where I call them disassociated, where they're in another time, they beg us not to call the police, and because they say automatically the police are going to kill them. Now, I do know suicide by cop happens, and that's a damn shame, but I have discovered in the journey of doing veteran suicide prevention that 95% of the police officers will get, especially if they're forewarned, which is what we try to do, will try to get a veteran that, or somebody that is relatable to veterans that can talk them down. I mean, hell, JG and I did it in damn person, where his battle buddy had a gun. The police were, he could hear them. The police were telling him to put it down. And once they got him taken care of, uninjured, the officer actually took the time to pick up the earpiece and talk to JJ on the other side. And he explained to them, he's not here. He's in war right now. He doesn't know what year it is. He doesn't know. So I think that stigma that, now I know if you come out with your guns blazing, as the person who got called in that they were suicidal and armed, I'm sorry, but at the end of the day, police want to go home too. But I think that stigma that nobody understands, so don't call the police to get them help, just, you know, kind of see if you're going to call their bluff and see if they're going to shoot themselves or not. I think that's a stupid stigma too. And I was wondering if you had any experience of being called out as kind of like, I don't want to use the word negotiator, but negotiator with a veteran in crisis?
Yes, I get many a call with that. I mean, first of all, I'm telling you, PTSD is no joke. It's how you get yourself help in dealing with PTSD. It's, you know, how you can cope with it and live with it. Whether JJ and I have the use of our service dogs, because, you know, some people just don't want to take medication or talking to someone. PTSD is, like I said, it's something that, you know, we veterans deal with, those of us that have it. And, you know, it's something you can manage and live a decent full life with it. Hello, I'm a prime example of that. As far as to your question, yes, I've gotten a few calls with some of our World War II and even the Vietnam veterans were in a situation where they lost it. They're armed. They're in their house. Cops are at the door. I get a call. Hey, Bobby, come over here. You're a veteran, talk to this guy. Talk this guy down. And when I get to talking with these individuals and just tell them, you know, I know what they're going through. I share stories with them. I get down to their level. I tell them, sometimes I get personal and tell them my story. And next thing you know, I get compliance, you know, the crying starts happening. He puts the gun down. And the goal is not to arrest the guy, it's to get the guy help.
I was going to say, I know our guy didn't get arrested. I mean, he was taken into custody, but there's a big difference between getting charged and being taken into custody for safety. And right. Yeah, he got his 72, but he needed that mandatory 72 in the psych ward. They didn't charge him, and they could have because he was pointing a gun at them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, when you got these rookie cops, oh, I'm going to get a gun. We call it collars. The rest, I'm going to get a gun collar. You know, you got to tell that rookie, you got to slow your roll. You know, this guy is a veteran. At this point in time, he's not looking at you or us. He's thinking he's in combat. He's reflecting what he's went through. And unless you've been in combat, you don't know what it's like. And I tell these young officers, you don't know what this guy's been through. You don't know what he's seen. He smelled. Anything could trigger it. Anything. It could have been a bad experience. It could have been people doing fireworks. It could have been an argument, whatever triggered it. You just got to get the guy help, get down to his level. And when I get personal and I show him or her, I know what you're going through. This is what I went through. And once he sees or she sees that, hey, you know what? I'm just like you. You see de-escalation happen. And then we can get that guy the proper help that he or she needs. It's all about getting the help, not about locking the person up, regardless of careless if he had a gun or not. It's not about arrest, charging him with a weapon. Sometimes they just need help. And that's what I need to instill in these young cops' minds. You know, these veterans are not just, they seeing things in a different light because of what they went through.
Well, this led into another, since you're a veteran and can relate. Do you think there needs to be more de-escalation taught, especially not every person out there that's holding a weapon at y'all has the intent to kill y'all or wants to die? They're just so lost in the moment, whether they be a veteran or a gangbanger. It doesn't matter. I have told people, yeah, back in my younger days, I thought fighting was the answer to everything. But you can talk 95% of, well, I'll say 90% of people into compliance without ever having to lay, you know. And I'm wondering if de-escalation, and I'm, before people get misunderstand me, I'm not saying take away an officer's right to have to defend himself, order their take their weapon away. Because if somebody walks in up on me and points a gun at me, I'm probably going to fire just the same.
Yeah.
But because, you know, at the end of the day, we're humans. We have families. I like to go home to mine and my dogs. And, you know, but I think that rookies get out with this mindset that they're going to get into gunfights, constant gunfights and stuff. And yeah, it depends on where you're working that you're going to have constant, you know, but like, I know officers that have been on the force for 20 years at my PD and have never, ever had to shoot anybody.
Exactly. And yeah, training is important. We don't have enough of it, but we do have training to deal with what we call EDP, emotionally disturbed persons. We have trainings for that. It should be more. I mean, you know, usually they give these training maybe once a year, which is sad. We should have more training on that. More is better.
And but, they keep, you know, and I watch them pull funds more and more, but the more funds they pull, the less classes and stuff they can take. I get yearly certs, you know, radar guns a little bit different, but, and I'm not talking about the veteran equivalent of sexual harassment training. Not that that doesn't need to happen, but I'm not, you know, I think that even if you've been there 15 years, you can teach an old dog new tricks and maybe things you did 15 years ago don't work now.
Right.
And I think a lot of things stem back to training. So before we start blaming every single police officer and every single police department, maybe they need to break down from the top of the line. And I don't mean the chief or the captain or the major or however your hierarchy works. I'm talking about all the way up to the real person that's in charge of the police department. Now, everybody seems to think that's the chief. Or whatever y'all go by. That is not. Or a commissioner for y'all. Who actually is in charge of the police department? In the all the way up.
Over in this city is the police commissioner. He's the top dog. He's the one that called the shots. Now, he has people under him. He has a deputy commissioner. He has a commissioner of training bureau, which is in charge of training for all the police. But overall, the buck stops at the police commissioner. And the police commissioner is a police officer. He was a former police officer. Once you commission to be a police commissioner, you take off the uniform. Now you are now a civilian role. But we're fortunate that our current police commissioner was my commanding officer. And he's a cop's cop, just like the former commissioner, Commissioner O'Neill. He was my commanding officer as well. So the buck falls on them. They determine the training and so forth.
I think a lot of people forget that mayors and city councils and governors also have a lot to say in police, especially budgeting and such. And everybody, like I said, everybody wants to start at, okay, well, they're let's get rid of this entire police department. But somebody is higher than them, and there's always going to be somebody higher than the next person and higher to the next person. If things don't ever change, no matter how many complaints, maybe you need to go all the way up to the top of the rung,
right,
and vote that person out and get somebody in that's going to care about the community as well as, because you can't, I can't picture a world of no police, because I mean, all I can think of is either the veterans are going to go Mad Max, or it's going to be like, oh, what the hell is that movie where they get one freebie a year? Somebody help me out. Somebody help me out. Name the movie, kids.
Purge?
Yes. Purge. So I feel like it's going to be either like Mad Max or Purge. Right. So, I mean, so what are you going to do? Exactly. So I don't understand the logic behind going, I'm going to defund an entire police department. Okay, so when someone's breaking into somebody's house or someone is committing a rape, what do you want them to do? Blow a whistle?
Yeah, what are you going to call, Ghostbusters?
Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
Exactly.
Let's be for real.
Oinky.
Come on, I just had a question. Yeah, when we you have a rookie comes in, do they sign like a contract with the department for a certain amount of years, or is it just as long as they sign on a dotted line, they can continue to serve as long as they do so honorably? Like the military, you know, usually you sign like a 4-year contract, and as long as you have good performance reports and you're doing your damnedest, you're allowed to reenlist per se and continue to serve. Do they do that in the police, you know, force, where they can, you know, at a certain time be like, nah, sorry, Rook, you know, you're just not meeting the standards and you're gone?
What we have here with the police department where I'm at is you're a probationary police officer for 2 years. There's no contract, but there is, when you first join, you're on probation for 2 years, which means if you don't perform up to the level, or if you get so many complaints, within 2 years, the NYPD can just say, you're fired. No questions asked. You're on probation. You're a probationary police officer. After you complete those 2 years, then you can say you're safe, but you're still held accountable. You can be charged. You can be, you name it. But at least for the first 2 years, you're on probation. You can lose your job for, you know, calling in sick too much or doing something that's, you know, a civilian complaint that was founded to be true. Anything minor, whatever it is, within the first 2 years, you're able to be fired. After the 2 years, now you have to, you know, you have to go through arbitration, and you have to go through the procedure. You got to get your delegates involved, the PDA, your lawyers. It's a different ball game.
Oh yeah. No, I read a comment on somebody's Facebook page, of course, that mentioned that maybe the police force as a whole should do some more like the military, where they do a 4-year contract, and if they don't meet the standards and or responsibilities up to that point, they can let them go, and then they can do another 4 years, so on and so forth. I was just wasn't sure if they could do it like that, or if it, like you said, obviously if they're going to commit a crime, they should be terminated at that point. But obviously we've seen a few slip through the cracks, which it happens in the military too, don't get me wrong. I was just kind of curious on how that worked.
Yeah, that's true. If we had something like that, like in the Marine Corps, imagine how the police department would be run. You're right. After the 4 years, they can be like, well, you know, no thanks, we don't want you no more. You haven't performed in the high standards that we have. You have X amount of civilian complaints. But you're right. No, it's not that way. Once you finish your probationary period, you're good to go. And like I said, you get due process if something happens.
I guess my only thing would be most departments, if not all departments, have internal affairs, or, I mean, that's what we call ours down here. But, you know, I know it's got to be time consuming when you have that person who calls in and says that a police officer went by their house too many times. But I'm wondering if internal affairs, because ours is literally one person, I'm wondering if those departments or those officers should not have more resources and more manpower to actually look into more complaints.
Yeah, well, our internal affairs has a whole lot of resources, a whole lot of manpower to check every complaint. Oh, they have everything they need, which they should. And in some points, yeah, sometimes you might get a dummy, a bull crap call that, hey, I want to make a complaint. Officer Joe Schmo, he called me an effing idiot. And they call internal affairs. When you get calls like that, what internal affairs will do, will take it. And if it's something like that, they'll redirect it back to the precinct level and tell the precinct commanders, listen, we received the complaint. It doesn't rise to the the standards of internal affairs investigation. You guys handle it. You investigate it. And if the cop has any wrongdoing, friends, if he did say F you to this person, then he or she could be reprimanded by the commanding officer as far as, well, I'm going to take 2 days from you. I'm going to put you in a foot post for whatever, 30 days. If it's a crime where, you know, someone called internal affairs, listen, this guy came to my house, he shook me down, he put all this money, my money in his pocket, then then we talk about criminal activity. Internal affairs gets the call, they investigate it fully, and after the investigation, he'll get his time hit. His or her time in court, and either be fired or prosecuted. But we have a big resource with internal affairs. We have internal affairs, we have civilian complaint review board, and then we have the precinct level.
Now we're talking about a major city with a lot of police precincts. These smaller towns, I feel like that things slip through more because it is the dumb complaints like, I saw two officers at Chick-fil-A, they're on the taxpayer's dime, so shouldn't they be working for us? And I'm like, you do realize they have to freaking eat once in a while, right? You know, I have to field them all the time because right now I've got a plethora of off-duty, and they're like, why aren't they out, you know, down the street arresting drunk Bob down there? And I'm like, because they're off duty and they're not the actual on duty police officers that are patrolling the city right now, so they have to kind of stay at Walmart because that's where we're paying them to be.
Yes.
And you know, and I get dumb stuff, well, like they're parked in the fire lane, and I'm like, they're an emergency vehicle, they're allowed to park in the fire lane. I'm just saying, you know. Yeah. And we get stupid stuff like that, and I know it gets back to the PD, and I know it's got to get old, but you know, and I'm glad you've got so many different levels to do it. I just think some cities just don't have the manpower, or they've just run the same way for the last 20 years. So if it ain't broke, they don't bother to fix it, even though it's broke all the shit.
Yeah. Anybody on this panel that has any, you know, interactions, you know, where they felt uncomfortable with a cop?
Well, you know, there was a story, a quick story. I'll try to make it as quick as possible. I'm PCSing from Okinawa, Japan, headed over to Germany. And, of course, on my midway tour, you know, between the two, I'm going home. Well, I landed in Chicago at like 4 o'clock in the morning. By the time I get down to where I live, which is about an hour south, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Well, here I am cruising the town of 70 people in this big old, you know, Chrysler New Yorker LHS with a dog in the back seat and all my luggage in the back. And it's just me and the wife, and we're cruising this little village at 7 o'clock, or like I said, 5 o'clock in the morning. And there goes a county cop. Well, that county cop was Derek, and his dad taught my baseball team. So I was like, I told the wife, I was like, watch this, we're going to get pulled over. She's like, no, we're not. I said, yes, we are. So he goes up and he circles by the little grain elevator. I go past him, and he pulls in behind me. Dude, I had set the cruise at 35. I'm doing the perfect speed limit. I get up to where it goes to 55. I'm hitting 55. Full stop. You know, I'm looking both ways for like 10 seconds, and there's nobody coming. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, long story short, we get on the highway, and like I said, about 5 minutes later, he hits the cherries. He pulls me over, and he's walking up with, you know, his hand on the holster, flashlight on, you know, on the other hand. hit the power windows. Hey, what's up, Derek? Dude, you should have seen him shit his drawers right there on the spot, because I tell you what, I scared the living shit out of him. You know, he ran the plates. It's coming back to some rental car place in Chicago, and he can't see through the back window because of the dog and all the luggage and stuff. So, you know, I felt for him, but, you know, like I said, I can see through his window who it was. And, you know, that's kind of a good laugh. But, you know, I can't imagine, you know, like I said, you know, a small town cop, you know, coming up on a car like that at 5 o'clock in the morning, not knowing what's inside. So you definitely have to be, you know, on your senses. And he was a little jumpy there for a second, but you know, I mean,
I've had a bad situation with an officer, but I handled it the right way. For some reason, this officer didn't want to get out of his police car because it was pouring down the rain. So he thought it was a great idea to shove me and the suspect both in the back of his car.
Oh, no.
Unhandcuffed.
Then
he proceeds to ask me to spell my entire full name to the letter. And it's very unusual. So, and then to give my home address, and then threatened to charge me when I refused because me and the shoplifter are sitting side by side. He's out of handcuffs. The very next day, I get a formal complaint at my store from said shoplifter. Had my exact name, had everything. So I, instead of being a big baby and, you know, march up to the police station and say, fuck the police, I literally called the sergeant. And I said, hey, I need to talk to you about something that happened, man. That kind of bugged me out a little bit because I didn't really feel safe, number one. And I thought this officer, it was kind of piss poor that instead of us all walking back, because I got a fucking office. I've always had an office. We've got somewhere to be. We ain't got to stand out in the rain. And the minute that the thing was done, he goes, well, you wait outside. And he called that officer in, and then he called me back in. Of course, I know it was forced, but he made the officer apologize, and that officer was removed from that side of town because he had such a problem with Walmart in general that he was just a dick no matter what he did, and I wasn't the first person to ever complain. And he's like, you should never throw the suspect in with the witness in the back of a police car, especially with no handcuffs on, because I'm sitting back here and I'm like, you didn't search his fool. You're asking you're asking for my personal information, and then you're threatening to arrest me, you know, because I'm like, you can't arrest the witness. I mean, I guess you can, but I'm not sure what law I'm breaking because I'm in the back of a police car with a suspect. But it doesn't make me hate all police. If I have a problem, I try to talk to that particular officer, and every once in a while I get the what I call the rookie syndrome, and they're hard-headed. So then I don't talk to the sergeant. I talk to the corporal, which is their three-stripe, and I say, hey, look, you need to go pull Bozo here aside. He's being a real douchebag, and it's not because I'm not getting my way or anything like that. Just he's being a douchebag, and it usually ends the problem. So people act like if you...
That's the proper way to handle it. Proper way to handle it.
You know, and I've called them out. If they've gotten what I consider verbally rough, I have said, yo, take it down a notch. And they'll look at me like, you're not... this is my case. And I'm like, yeah, but this is my office. So if you're going to act like this to this person, you're going to take it outside. But, you know, and I still have those ones that bust into my office and go, well, I'm on scene. I'm in charge. They're in your custody. So whatever happens, happens. And I understand that, but I'm not going to stand by and let you do it. I'll walk out of my own damn office or throw you out. And what are you going to do? Complain on me? I would love to talk to the chief, you know, but usually it's something that the heat of the moment. And if you go, dude, easy, come on, man. And they've had to do it to me. It stops. Now, could I stand by and watch somebody probably go get shot or go into jail? I can't stand around and watch somebody do something intentionally that I know is wrong, right? You know? So as much as some people, I think, deserve getting thrown through a wall, I don't condone throwing them through the wall for no reason, is my point.
Got it. That's the proper way to handle a complaint like that.
I guess our point would be in all of this is you're human. At the end of the day, I'm hoping that people listen to the show and don't just pick up on, well, even he agreed with, you know, that this, that's not what we're trying to make this out to be. There's a human being behind each shield, whether they're a good human or a bad human is to be determined the good humans behind the shield need to stand up and make sure that the bad ones are weeded out. And I think that's everybody's job. But at the same time, people need to remember, you might be going through a divorce and you might be going through hard times. That's why you ended up in my office stealing, but you don't know what they're going through in their personal life because they're not allowed to bring it and wear it to work.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the message I want to send out. You know, we're human. You know, the majority of us police officers, we do it because we love the job. I know I've been doing it for almost 20 years. I love it. I love to serve the public. I love public service. I love being a U.S. Marine. I love being an NYPD detective. I do it because my heart and soul is in on it. When you see me in the street, it's okay. Say hello. I'm a regular guy. Just please, I ask the public, don't let that one incident or those incidents that's happened and label all of us like that, because that's not the case. There's good police officers out there. There really are in all departments, not just NYPD. And that's the message I want to, you know, bring across, that, you know, there's good guys and girls out there doing the right thing because they want to do it. And it's unfortunate you got people like that individual who did what he did. It just put us back. Just when we were getting the public's trust back, when everybody was heroes, the COVID-19, everybody's a hero. When 9/11 happened, we were heroes. And now you got this moron set us back. So don't see us like that. You know, we're not like that. We really are not. And I'm telling you from experience, take it from myself. You know, I'm telling you, I'm honest. I'm genuine. This is just me. I'm a regular guy doing what I got to do to serve my community. And that's all.
Well, you can't say much more than that. I want to take a quick break, and I want to, if Devil Dog has time, because I know he's on his lunch break and I'm just waiting for his pager to go off. But I want to do our quick break, which basically just means we're going to stop talking. And I want to come back and ask, he said something earlier, and I know it was on another show, but I want to ask him about it. So you're listening to Frag Out, Drag Out. You know all the rest, WDVR, blah, blah, blah. And plus, Oink's forgotten to put something in the show that we always put, and that's his fault because he didn't remember. So we'll be right back.
DDV Radio.
And welcome back to Frag Out, Drag Out. Our extended version, apparently. Still Nevermore, Oink, Frosty, Uncle Fester, and our special guest, Devil Dog. He literally just told an awesome freaking story on our little mini break, and now he's got to retell it because that was awesome.
Well, before I got on the show, I just went out on a call where someone says they had a bird stuck on their fire escape. Being the animal lover that I am, I went. Believe it or not, it was a hawk, a red-tailed hawk. So I wrapped it up with a towel, put it in a dog crate, and I took it to animal control, and they're going to rehab it and release it. So that's, you know, one of the perks. I get to deal with all type of calls, not just arresting criminals or answering calls. Look at that. I save animals. I'm a jack of all trades.
I was going to say, not every call is about a criminal, you know? Some of it is, I mean, I've seen calls where little old ladies can't go to the grocery store and need milk, and I've seen officers take the milk. No, you shouldn't be calling 911 for that, but...
Yeah, yeah. I got a call with a lady. She wanted me to have dinner with her. She was like 80 years old.
Aww.
Sat down there for 20 minutes, ate some spaghettis and meatballs, and called it a night.
Oh, that is so sweet. I mean,
and she calls me her grandson.
Bless her heart that she had to call the police as for somebody to have dinner with her, but you didn't have to do it, and you did.
I did. Yeah, I did.
Oh, see, that's cool. Now, you mentioned earlier that you have a service dog. So now my curiosity, because I honestly don't pay attention to anything in life because I'm ADHD and kind of in my own little world, and there's probably six musicals going on in my head right now, but what kind of dog do you have?
I have a Husky German Shepherd mix by the name of Layla, and she is wonderful, wonderful. And I got to tell you what, give big props to JJ for guiding me with everything I need to know about service dogs. Great book, JJ.
And so since you have a Husky mix and we have a lovely, lovely Malamute who is currently sleep running and God knows what, do you ever get those 4 a.m. when you're in a good sleep phantom howls, like they're sound asleep and they howl at the top of their lungs and then like all the hairs on you stand up?
Oh, Lord have mercy. Layla does that a lot. Or if I happen to turn a certain way, she'll jump on me like I'm having a nightmare, because that's what she's been trained to do. And I'm like, Layla, I'm just turning around. go back to sleep. She's fantastic, I tell you, man. She's wonderful, and I thank God I have her. She's a great service dog. She really is.
Now, you don't have to answer this because I don't know your situation, but do you get to take her to work?
I do not get to take her to work only because of the work that I do. And it's a liability because, number one, I don't want to put her in harm's way. Not at all. So I don't take her to work. She stays home with, you know, with the wife and the kids. And, you know, I wish I could take her, but I'm not going to be selfish and put her in any type of danger. On my days off, I'll bring her, especially when I meet kids and they love to see her. But, you know, I try not to let her get too attached to this job, because then every cop in the precinct wants to go pet up on Layla. And, you know, when she's working, she's working. Mm-hmm. When she's not working, it's okay. But I just want to keep her focused.
Exactly. I mean, JJ and I've had that discussion a lot. You know, Skeeter will work for me, but even if I could take him to work to keep the anxiety and the anger rage monster down to a minimum, I can't, because the first time a shoplifter was to kick my dog, I'm going to jail. I mean, that doesn't mean, like you said, everybody has to find a way to cope and deal with things that go on mentally. I have my timeouts. I go kick buildings. I don't kick humans. Right. I may lose my temper once in a while and curse and shout, but that's about the end of it. You know, I don't break shit or anything like that. I was just curious because.
I appreciate the question. And if people look at me, hey, Double Dog, you know, hey, you know, you're a detective and, you know, you got all these years of experience. Well, why are you going to dirt one? Why are you got a service dog? Why are you disabled? And that's a question that I hate. And first of all, you're not supposed to, can't be asking me what's my disability.
Oh, no.
But Layla, she's great. Layla is trained for PTSD. She's fantastic. And I just want these people out there to know it's okay if you have PTSD and you can live a functional life with PTSD with, you know, with the help that you get.
You can still have normal jobs or stressful jobs.
I have Layla, and Layla's my, you know, she keeps me in line, and, you know, and she's been a blessing. So, that's just the worst. When you go to a store, you got these stupid store owners stopping you, and what's your disability? Why do you need that service dog? And that's when I refer back to the book that JJ published, and, you know, that's my Bible. That's my go-to book.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because it's more humanizing, because like I said, the point of the show was to teach that there's a human behind every badge, whether it be good or bad, but the majority is good. But I think that people also don't think that just because people have been through some shit that they can do high stress jobs or jobs where there's, like, you got to go physical or you carry a weapon or this and that, if you do have PTSD or anything like that. And that's not true. I mean, my job's not all funs and gamesies, and sometimes I have to de-escalate myself, and sometimes I can't. And like I said, I have things in place, and I have coworkers that, I mean, my partner, for one, like, we had some lady, and you can laugh at this. They're not going to be able to appreciate the humor, but you're going to have seen something similar. They can just picture it. But we had one lady who decided that her multiple personality did the shoplifting. And then she ended up on the floor screaming at the corner of the room, screaming, "Don't hurt me, don't hurt me." And just a good old show to get out of trouble. And then it only triggered when she started to break down and cry. And when that didn't work with the police officer, then the crazy switch hit. And you know what I'm talking about. Like, they're not crazy, but they flip that on thinking you're going to be like, "Oh, it's okay that you just committed a crime. You get to go home now and you get to leave." And she was still getting to go home. She was just getting a citation. Misdemeanor larceny is a citation down here that you can write. You, it's not an automatic arrest. But, I mean, and she, I mean, I think my exact response was, well, at one point she goes, "Look, bitch, my personalities do not like you." And I was like, "Well, my personalities don't fucking like you either." And at that point, my partner literally said, "But put both," because I always wear one earbud because I don't like hold my phone up, because sometimes a 2-hour or 6-hour shoplifter, your arm gets tired. But he goes, "Put in your second earbud and put on your YouTube and sit in the corner and I'll finish this out." So there are plans in place. Now, I have a thing against bodies, so I could never be a police officer, and there's not enough heavy metal music in the world to have somebody screaming in my face, so God bless what you do. I can take it for short periods of time, but After about 15 minutes, I just want to, and this is why I'm not a police officer, because I would backhand them and be like, if you would shut up, I could be done with this and we could part ways. But no, you're prolonging this. But I don't want to hold this up too much longer. So Uncle Fester, do you got any other questions or anything you want to ask him?
I don't think I have any other questions. I do appreciate your time, Devil Dog.
No worries. Like I said, any question is fine with me. I guess I'm a straight shooter. Don't worry. No question's too difficult for me. Ask away.
Do you like donuts?
I love donuts. I love donuts. Are you kidding me? Boston cream. You want to send me some? Send me
literally
some.
Dude, I mean, I always had the running joke because when I was it was security forces then, but an MP, they're like, so I guess you like donuts. And I was like, nah, they kind of made a mess in my spare ammo holster. So I used Pop-Tarts because they were square and they fit in there better. But I love a damn donut, y'all.
Who doesn't? Come on, man. Who doesn't?
They act like only police eat donuts. And I can tell you from a entire staff of fluffy people, we probably all damn like donuts, especially Oink, who probably eats bacon on his.
Yes. Have you ever had donuts?
Have you ever had the bacon covered donuts?
Oh no, you're getting high tech.
Oh my lord. That is the most awesome donut ever.
Oh, we'll introduce you to it because JJ found a place around here that has bacon donuts. Just come to visit sometime with Layla and you'll see. But Oink, do you got any more questions or anything?
No more questions. The only thing, like I said, you know, whether it be the thin blue line or the thin green line, brother, if you're ever in our area, you know, we got your six, man.
I appreciate that a lot. I really do appreciate it, brothers. Same goes here. If you come to NYC, you're my brothers, you're my sisters. I will treat you just like family.
Dude, I was there right after 9/11. And I was terrified, but only because of the taxi drivers. Everybody was like, when you're on the street, don't, you know, look down and keep walking. And we're from the South, so we're not used to people just bumping into us and not saying, excuse me. But I had it in my head, you know, walk through the crowd. Don't look around. I love the street, the street people. You know, they're making music and this. But I got in a taxi, and I feared for my life. Not to mention I feared crossing the street because downtown New York City, by Times Square, they do not break for pedestrians. I'm telling y'all, they do not break for pedestrians. You better be quick getting across that street.
Funny thing is, I have an uncle that lives out there in the Bronx as well, and he actually played a small part in the Peacekeeper, whatever that George Clooney film was. He actually played a New York City cabbie for like a split 3 seconds and made a whole $350 in doing it. So, cool. Yeah.
It's like an episode of Fast and Furious live. But, and then what tickled me was seeing the actual, some of the police cars. They were like little tiny hamster mobiles. They were like the smallest damn police cars I've ever seen in my life. Do you have horseback police officers in your district?
We have plenty of mounted unit, and we got, we have now smart cars. So we got the little matchbox cars, but our mounted units, we have plenty of. We use them during the protests. The huge retired racehorses.
JJ, we're going to New York just so I can go hang out at the PD and play with the horses.
Another thing we have, I forgot to say, to bridge that gap, and we have the Citizens Police Academy, where you can come as a regular citizen. You go for 12 weeks to the police academy, learn everything we do regarding enforcement, the shooting range, the car stops, and you graduate, you get a nice diploma, you get a picture with the PC. My wife is a graduate, so she swears she's a cop, but she's not. But it's a good program we do to bridge the gap. The Citizens Police Academy is a great program, free of charge.
I do have one question. Sure. When you have all the horses out there, who cleans up after them?
Sanitation. Thank you, sanitation. Sanitation department.
Frosty, do you have any more questions or anything?
No, not really questions, but thank you for being on here and really appreciate your time and everything you do and all you're advocating for.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate
for everything.
I really appreciate all of you guys for everything you guys do.
And Semper Fi, brother.
Semper Fi, and please, God bless. Stay strong.
And my last thing is going to be whether you support the thin blue line, you think that's a dumb symbol, or you don't. Most police officers appreciate it. I myself have a thin blue line flag around here. So if you don't like them, don't commit crimes and you don't have to interact with them. If you do like them, show them support. Just remember, I hope hearing this show, you hear that Devil Dog is indeed not a robot, and he's not pre-programmed by some kind of Russian spy to automatically be a bad guy. I mean, if a service dog will work for you, I'm just going to say that I think that's the coolest shit in the world, that a police officer that is still on the force has a working service dog, still goes to work every day. If that doesn't say human, I don't know what doesn't, you know, there's nothing else I can do. So seriously though, Devil Dog, we definitely appreciate you. Thank you for taking your time out, because he's on his lunch break, but on his shift. So that means Beeper can go off at any moment, anytime, but I'm seriously coming up there just to see the horses now.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
I was going to say, don't forget to check on your brothers and sisters out there. Not only those of us in green, but blue, red, whatever color you're wearing. First responders, all that. Check on each other. Make sure everybody's doing good. If you need help, reach out.
Amen.
Objective Zero is a good one. There's all kinds of places you can check on. So if you need help, reach out and check on your brothers and sisters.
And I'm going to add to that. If you're a first responder and you feel like you've got nowhere to go, message Frag Out Drag Out. Message PTS Dog. We will personally get in contact with Devil Dog, and he can point us in the right direction. And if I already can tell, he would probably just hand you his cell phone number and tell you to call him. But absolutely. Seriously, first responders, this ain't just for veterans. You ever need anything, reach out. I may not know exactly what you're going through, but I will figure out a way to help you. And that's dead serious. And before I try to end the show, Frosty.
I'm good.
No one-liners to make me laugh my way out of this? Okay. All right. Don't say I didn't give you the opportunity.
From our Devil Dog brother over there at K-Bar Soap Company, check out his products he got over there, K-Bar Soap Company. K-Bar Soap Company is the only all-natural soap and beard care option you'll ever need. Better known and operated. Ditch the bar, grab a grenade, make showering great again.
You've been listening to Frag Out Drag Out, our very special episode on DV Radio, WDVR. And that's all, folks.